Right, everybody ready?
Ready.
All good? Good.
Excellent. Playthrough podcast. This is episode 115 and covers part 4 of our God of War playthrough. This is the final part of our God of War playthrough and also the final episode of this season. So all good things must come to an end, even this. So if you've been keeping up with us, we left it off at, where had we got to actually? Where we just got to last time around?
Ooh, recap. Was...
It's recap, Jim. Back by popular demand.
Did you never actually volunteered yourself, Jim? So did you?
He
actually,
didn't need to. Mads volunteered him about 7 times.
I thought I did.
No. So did you actually do one?
Yeah.
Thank you.
I thought much. I did. I think I just must have got lost in it. We were chatting, weren't we, Mads? I can't remember what we were chatting about now.
I was randomly saying hello to people. So, yes.
Yeah.
SpongeBob SquarePants.
That was it. My pick for next season.
Great. No worries. Well, as always, joined obviously tonight by Mads Christensen, Chris Worthington, and Jim Mibbleton.
Jim Musclefine.
Jim Musclefine. But we're not going to, if you've been keeping up with us, you know the format by now, so we're not going to hang around and we'll get into the good stuff. So Jim, tell us where we left off and what's been happening since.
We had, Atreus had recovered from his god sickness. Shortly after this, Kratos comes clean about his lineage. He tells Atreus that he's a god from a distant land. His mother was immortal. And then he points out that, obviously makes this obvious to Atreus that he's of god descent. They left Freya to her pig in the woods, and then they went off to Tyr's temple. Is that how we pronounce
that's
it?
The one, mate.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Tyr's temple. Tyr. To collect the...
It's called Tyr.
Tua. He's quarterback for the Dolphins, isn't he?
Yeah.
Not anymore. We went to Tua's temple to collect the black rune from the vault. This is like a Zelda-type sort of dungeon, loads of traps, a little puzzle that managed to confuse most of us, but Chris, I think it was. had a short frolic. We fought some Valkyries with varying success. I'm sure we'll come back onto those later on. Then we got the chisel at this point, and we got the rune, and that meant that we could access the Jotunheim gateway, so the land of the giants. On the way to the gateway, we bumped into Modi again. He's been handed a beating by Odin after Magni's death. He's pretty much sort of done for. Atreus decides that this is a good time to finish him off. He's gone full on god teenager at this point. Despite Kratos' insistence that he doesn't, and he kills Modi. We carried on to the Jotunheim gateway. Balder arrives just as we're about to sort of cross the gateway, and it all kicks off. Atreus fires an arrow, one of the lightning arrows, into Kratos to sort of take him out of the action, so he can take on Balder himself, and that goes about as well as you'd expect. Atreus gets captured by Balder at this point. He makes his escape on there's a dragon. There's a big sort of QTE and cinematic battle that follows. They crashed into the Realm Tree,
They come down on the bridge, don't they?
Yeah. And then they end up in the realm tree, don't they?
Yeah, he pursues them into the temple, doesn't he?
Yeah. And then following more fighting, they end up back in Helheim. Yeah.
Yep.
So whilst we're in Helheim, Atreus, Kratos, and Baldur, they all see visions of like their past. Atreus he turns nice again. Straight away.
Yes, yeah. Very quickly. Just as quickly as he turned bad.
Yeah,
he decided he didn't like it after all.
We made our escape on a flying ship before crashing into one of Odin's hidden temples, where we found a tablet that I think Odin had been using to go between the realms. Is that right? And we find out then that there's another way to get to Jotunheim, because when we had the fight with Baldur, we destroyed the bridge to Jotunheim. So we find in this hidden temple, there's another way that we can get into.
Tyr, wasn't it? Wasn't it Tyr?
Was it Tyr that had been using the tablet?
Because Tyr had been travelling between the realms, hadn't
he? That's it, yeah. That's it, yeah. And that was it, because Odin didn't know about it, did he? He'd got this tablet but didn't know about it, yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you, yeah, yeah. And that's where we all put down the controller.
Exactly that. Thank you. I do love your recaps, Jim. They're very good. They're always very succinct.
Mm. It's much better than when Chris does it, Jim. Oh, I like you better.
That's not what I was saying.
I like it better as well, Jim.
No, I like yours.
I almost cried last time when Chris had to do it. But
You were generally, I think, quite upset, Mads. Yeah.
No, Chris, you're good
too. Do it next
time,
you punk.
So normally when you introduce these, you introduce us one by one, and you guys always have something witty to say. I actually prepared this time, and then we didn't do it.
So joining me tonight, we have
it's too late now.
Come on.
I'm sorry, Mads. It's just you had one last time as well, so you did.
I did, but Chris scolded me immediately because he thought I was just just ignoring him.
I spoiled it.
I can edit in late. We'll record it at the end and I'll edit it in. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. Just leave it here. Sounds better. What is it, Mads?
What is what? Oh, sorry, it doesn't work now. I'm not going to do it. No, I was just going to say that the turns out I was Judas all along. It's going to work. It's going to work.
Far too clever for me, that.
Yeah. It's one of them. Tumbleweed. It's gone straight over my head.
And I was going to be
it doesn't take
of
much.
An Odin raven.
Pigeon.
Mm. No, it's like got that very distinctive sound, doesn't it? An Odin's raven.
It does.
You can differentiate it from the
it's
other.
Very high-pitched squawk or sort of screech.
So I've missed so many of those. I think I've only got like 17 or 20.
Have you?
Yeah.
I think I made it up into the 30s.
Okay.
I can screenshot you all the pages in the guidebook if you want to go and hunt for them.
I don't.
It's really good fun. It's brilliant.
I'm sure it is.
I've got a tale to tell when it comes to when we talk about kind of mopping up.
We've got two platinums here, don't we?
No.
Oh, you didn't get it?
Oh, no.
Oh, Chris.
I told you I wouldn't.
Not yet.
Mm.
Are you going to finish it off?
No.
Oh, I'm done. Oh, you've come so far.
I'm not a slave to those trophies.
You should be. You should be.
Is that what your therapist told you to tell yourself?
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm free of them.
I'm in control. Good. Well, very good. Well, tonight, we said this at the last time we introduced an extra episode last time around, just to give us a wee bit more of an opportunity to discuss some of the wider aspects. So we'll rattle through the story aspects of this, because there's quite a lot to discuss about the end game revelations, where it leaves us for the next one, and then also, if there's time, what we're going to be doing next. So this one covers A Path to Jotunheim, Between the Realms, Jotunheim in Reach, Mother's Ashes, and The Journey Home. So we pick up just after where Jim would give us a quick recap there with A Path to Jotunheim. And this is what technically forms the 15th chapter, the 15th main story quest. And following the destruction of the bridge to Jotunheim during the fight with Baldur, Kratos and Atreus, we need to find effectively an alternative route into the realm of the giants.
Lovely, lovely pronunciation of Jotunheim there.
Was it?
Yeah, that was good.
Oh, yes. Thanks, Mads. I feel quite chuffed now. So I'll give a quick brief overview of what we did, and then we can discuss the key points of it. So in this, the main mission points, there's a hidden chamber. So Mimir reveals that Tyr built a secret travel room beneath his temple, and to access it, Kratos and Atreus need to find a way to flip the whole structure. So we're going to the Hall of Tyr, and once we're inside the temple, there's another series of traps and puzzles, these mechanical traps that we need to navigate our way through. Also use the Winds of Hell on a few occasions, quite well practiced with that now. And then you eventually reach a chamber that contains two massive chains that hold the temple in place. In order to flip the temple, we need to break these chains, and having done so, we get, I think, might be our final two trolls that we fight, which are Grendel of the Ashes and Grendel of the Frost, and obviously need to use the alternative weapons on them for the best chance of success. And then subsequently, having killed them off and broken the chains, Kratos can use his not inconsiderable strength to flip the entire temple upside down, which he seems to use the same amount of effort to lift a temple as what he does to lift a small boulder. But I don't know, maybe he has to tap into different parts. Who knows? Anyway, once we've flipped the temple and gone within it, we recover the Unity Stone, which is an artifact that allows us to travel between the realms through the space between worlds, as Mimir says. And that basically culminates in a leap of faith where, in order to calibrate the stone, Kratos, Atreus, and Mimir jump off the edge of the Yggdrasil realm travel path into the White Void. I don't know if you guys tried that at any point earlier in the game.
Yeah, I did. You die.
Yeah.
But can you do that? I was wondering.
Yeah, you can. So if you walk to it earlier in the game, it gives you the circle prompt. And you can jump off, and it basically just kills him. And so I didn't try it subsequently, right enough. Can you go back to Jotunheim? Do you know? I didn't try. Or between the realms, can you go back?
What, after doing it where it works?
Or did the Unity Stone? Anyway, I think the Unity Stone.
Atreus asked you to do it again. He thinks it's fun. So
yeah.
You should.
However, when we get there, we find that even with the Unity Stone, we discover that we can't reach Jotunheim because the realm tower is missing from the lake. And Mimir surmises that the giants hid the tower in the space between realms. And to bring it back, they need to find his missing second eye to be able to navigate the realm travel room. It was quite a good little kind of... It was a good mission to get us back into things, I think.
Yeah. I like the traps. I like Tyr's temples and all of the traps. That's good fun navigating.
It looks amazing, man. That when you go into Tyr's temple and you get, you know, like the location wording comes up, and it's like it's really, what's the word for like something that looks like really what's the blooming word? Like it's drips of like money, doesn't it? Like it's really...
Mm.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Wealth.
Ostentatious.
Yeah.
It's really like ostentatious, and it's like, you know, it's all shiny and it
looks incredible on the PS5 as well, with all the polished surface, all the lighting effects in there particularly. Looks absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. I don't know about what you guys find this about this back section of the game, is that... And this is the problem with games where there's lots of side content that you can use to level. Like, I was so overpowered, like, for the enemies. It's just laughable.
So what level are you at the minute? So after I realised that I was playing the game, like, ridiculously low-levelled, I went and upgraded all my gear, got myself up to level 7. So what
I was 7 level as well. I was 7 when I ended the game.
Okay.
Yeah, I think I was probably 8 by this point, because as soon as I got the Niflheim Cipher, which you get right at the start of this mission, it's on the critical path.
Mm-hmm.
You can miss it, I suppose, if you don't open any chests, but it's difficult to miss. I kind of backed out and then did all the stuff, did all the other stuff.
So before I came to all this, I went to Muspelheim.
Yes.
Spent a couple of hours there That was interesting.
And then your muscles were fine. They were fine.
And then I picked up the main story after that. And I'm glad I did it that way, because if I'd gone back into Muspelheim after doing the story, I'd have walked away.
I suspect that because to my mind it feels quite backloaded in this game, all the real kind of high level stuff. To my mind, it's effectively setting you up for a new game plus playthrough, because all of the good stuff that you get, it's so late in the day, particularly with the things like by doing the Valkyries and getting the Valkyrie armor set, all that sort of stuff. You would need to be probably quite close to the end of the game to be able to beat them in the first place. And then you get some really cool stuff, but then it's kind of lost its purpose by that point, because you really need it more to be able to beat the Valkyries. And then by the time you've got it and you pick back up with the main story quest, you're so over-leveled for that side of things that
the problem.
It just becomes a cakewalk. So, but as you say, that's always the problem you're going to have with having, because I think the Valkyries absolutely need to be additional content. You wouldn't want to have to, if beating them was essential to progressing the story, it'd be horrendous. It does just mean that you do, by the end of the game, on the story path at least, you're too high leveled. And
if I was advising someone about playing this game for the first time, you know what I think I would probably do is say, just mainline the story. Just mainline the story. Keep going, because I think then you get the best narrative experience, because you keep the tempo of the story.
Yeah.
And then go into New Game Plus and then do all the optional stuff.
Yeah.
I think that would be the ideal way to play it.
But you wouldn't get any of the best armor or anything like that, would you?
You get enough, though, Jim. I think you get enough stuff on the critical path to keep everything a challenge.
But you always said, Chris, for the past couple of episodes we've recorded, that you really enjoyed the combat where you feel overpowered because you feel like a god of war in God of War. So you'd only get that by leveling a bit, wouldn't you?
Well, maybe.
And I do enjoy that. But the problem is it makes... you're so overpowered by this point in the game. It makes it almost mindless.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, okay, so I'm a little bit the other way, really, because we've just seen in the last proper level, I suppose, isn't it? The temple where you break the chains.
Yeah.
We've just seen him flip this temple. And then, he should be one punching Draugrs. He should be putting his fist through them. They shouldn't be taking four or five hits to go down.
That's true.
So if anything, I want him more powerful.
Yeah, he probably shouldn't be getting squished by the traps in Tyr's temple either.
If you lift the entire
temple, you're probably not going to get squashed by the traps inside it.
This is not real life.
As we need to constantly remind ourselves in this podcast, they're only video games. A cool setting without a doubt. It was a nice one to get us back into it. So we then move on to the next story mission, chapter 16, effectively, Between the Realms. And this is just a very short transitional quest. And it is where, now that we've got the Unity Stone from Tyr's Vault, we need to reach the Jotunheim realm. I'm very conscious about how I'm saying Jotunheim now, Matt. I'm getting distracted every time. We need to reach the realm tower, which has been hidden in the space between the realms. Upon entering the realm between realms, we basically have to run a gauntlet where Kratos and Atreus step onto this circular platform as it travels through the different dimensions. And as we do so, we're basically forced into a series of combat encounters against waves of enemies from...
That was extremely gamey. The most gamey part of this game, wasn't it?
It's throwing waves of enemies at you, doesn't it?
It was a nice opportunity to beat them up all over again, but we fight the... Broods of Nightmares from Midgard, we fight Dark Elves from Alfheim, Hellwalkers from Helheim, and then the Ogres and the Fire Inhabitants from Muspelheim. But there wasn't anything particularly challenging about it, I wouldn't suggest. If anything, it was quite good fun when they all came spilling out. Each time you would get to the next realm and then the doors would open and they would all come spilling out by this point. I don't know about you, because we talked about it last time as to what weapons we were primarily using if it wasn't being dictated by the enemy type, whether it was a fire and an ice type. I was pretty much exclusively using the Blades of Chaos by the end of the game. And in these fights particularly, there's just some sequences where this game is absolutely at its best, where you're button bashing and there's no two ways about it. But it's what the game does do so nicely is translate that button bashing into something that looks incredibly cool on the screen and makes you actually feel like you're doing something much more complex than what you are. But
I felt much more in control with the axe. Maybe I was just more used to it, but it felt like I was controlling what he was doing. I'd be doing three little hacks and then one big slam, and then I had no different ways of combining my attacks with the axe. Whereas when I was with the chains or whatever they called those blades, I would just be button mashing.
And I think it quite often starts off, particularly once you've got them all maxed out and all the different skills, is that even just button mashing, it seems to put together automatically a few combos for you, and then ends up adding in a couple of extra swings. So I think with the axe, you've got, like you say, it's probably more, we obviously are so fond of the combat within Dark Souls where a button press translates to a swing, whereas I think maybe with those Chaos Blades there's a couple of extra moves in there that by this stage of the game it's not like it's in any way critical where, you know, whether or not you take an extra swing, but at the same time it just feels that the Chaos Blades maybe feel but I quite like that. I like that sort of feeling that they are literally just, he's just swinging them anywhere and everywhere. And particularly if you're in a crowded area, it just looks very cool as he clears them all out.
Yeah. I'd be interested to see. Oh, go on, Chris.
No, go on, Jim.
I was just going to say, I'd be interested to see how they deal with it in Ragnarok. Because obviously we're fully powered up now, aren't we? We've got both weapons.
They're going to do the gamey thing and strip him of everything. Maybe give him amnesia as well, and then start over.
I think he's going to be like massively overweight, and
we need to train him, whip him in bag into shape.
Yeah, he's basically just sat and like eating hunks of meat in his hut for the next 10 years. And he's got bad knees as well, and all this sort of stuff. It's
I could sympathise with that.
Slightly incontinent and all this sort of stuff. He's just becoming old.
I'm not so much that.
You're amongst friends, you can be honest.
I found the blades really good for like crowd control, so whenever you've got a lot of enemies around you, because it's got that wide kind of almost like an area of attack. I never really, you know, I kind of had the best intentions of you know, trying to learn all the various combos and all stuff like that. And I think particularly with the blades, what you said, Andy, is spot on. That And this is why I really, really like the combat, because I think it kind of makes you feel good without you having to be good at the game. You know, the game, like the representation, the game's representation of what you're doing with your fingers is so not really in sync. So it just looks really, really cool. Mm. And I think, well, I probably couldn't do that if I was left to my own devices. So, I appreciate the help.
Well, definitely, yeah. And then occasionally, say in my case, you would accidentally trigger one of the additional abilities,
and then it looks really
with the Chaos, but the one that you could do, which I would do intentionally, was if you pressed L1 and R1 at the same time, and he basically just unleashes this skipping rope of doom.
Yes, that's the one I use, and it slams him down, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And I wonder if, like, on the harder difficulties, none of us played it on hard, let alone give me God of War. I imagine you've got to be a lot more precise, you know, with your blocking and your parrying and your timing on those difficulty levels. But again, I go back to what I said. I don't feel like the game is meant to be played that way. I don't feel like it's...
Yeah.
I would be frustrated because, as we've talked about before, the combat isn't precise enough to be rewarding if it's really, really, really hard and if you can get be one shot killed by anything.
Yeah, I think a big part of it is pacing as well, isn't it? This plays like everything is supposed to be like a combo. You're chaining attacks. Everything's supposed to be fast, whereas like when you're playing something like a Soulsborne,
it's exactly slower. Scientific and precise. It's very different, very, very different style of game.
Yeah, that's probably a good point to drop in a clip from one of our listeners and one of the stalwarts of the podcast, Moppin, who has sent in a clip because he did start it on the highest difficulty and ultimately dropped it down. So here's him giving his thoughts on the game in general, but it just relates to this conversation we're having. So we'll hand over to him and we'll back with you in a few minutes.
Hi, this is Moppin with some thoughts on God of War. I'm going to be fairly critical of the game, even though I did really enjoy playing, and I'm looking forward to playing the sequel. So first, I liked how the quest that Kratos and Atreus undertake is so personal with seemingly low stakes. I didn't like the combat or level design. The combat seemed floaty or imprecise, and early on when I was still getting my head beat in by Draugr and wolves, I had a hard time. One-on-one combat, the few times you get to experience it, is great. The Valkyrie fights are a standout memory. I fought all of them as soon as they were available, and that made for some tough, but fun fights. I started the game on the hardest difficulty setting, and I couldn't even make it past the first group of Draugr. After many, many deaths, I restarted on the second most difficult mode, and that's how I played the entire game. I found the difficulty curve essentially broken. About three quarters of the way through the game, I learned that min-maxing strength and defense did next to nothing compared to just wearing your highest level gear, no matter the stats, no matter the perks. Once I started doing that, I jumped from level 4 to 7, and then 8, and suddenly I was playing on easy mode. Even Sigrun, Queen of the Valkyries, wasn't that tough. I did use the Fire Hose of Doom, though. As for level design, the map is just a series of puzzle boxes and combat arenas with little consideration to world building, just a sequence of puzzles that are perfectly placed for anyone with a magic boomerang to solve. Atreus is our window into this world, and so much of the lore is given to us through his questions or explanations with a focus on these myths that my mother told me are actually real. And yet, the world is so contrived and gamey. My favorite area was the mountain, just because there actually seemed to be a story reason for its puzzles. Plus, the dragon boss fight was really cool. What an epic fight. I did like the Lake of Nine and seeing it change when the water level dropped. I wish that had happened a third time. I'm not going to comment on Atreus being an arrogant little godling any more than to say it was unearned and I can't believe it made it into the game. And there are some revelations near the end of the game that feel hollow and more about setting up the game for a sequel. But knowing that Faye foresaw their journey and even kicked it off makes me want to know more about her and how she died. So I hope that's part of the sequel. In conclusion, I've been looking forward to playing Dark Souls 3 for years now, and I can't wait to start. Thanks to Andy for taking us through the game and the other hosts, and of course, the fine members of the Discord group.
A massive thanks to Moppin for sending in his clip and, as always, for being such an active participant, both in the game that we're playing and then with the Discord chat also, and as a reward for his perseverance, as he alluded to, there may be something that's right up his alley that's going to come along after this.
That's not definite yet, is it? It's not.
Don't give the game away from
Rugrats. We decided to take my game first. I remember that clearly. So,
well, we shall see.
Rugrats on the GBA.
Yep.
SpongeBob.
Yes, and then so we were just finishing up the gauntlet there, and then having survived that, the platform docks and the Jotunheim Realm Tower is successfully restored to the Lake of Nine in Midgard, allowing us to make our way there. We can then go and light the brazier at it and explore it, and we realise that even with the tower back, Mimir realizes that he can't initiate the travel sequence because he's missing his second eye, which Odin took from him initially, I think, didn't he? And then subsequently hid. So it takes us on to the next chapter, which is Jotunheim in Reach. And within this one, well, I mean, just on that one there, I think there wasn't much else to say about that. Was there anything else from that one that kind of particularly stood out for you guys? It was just, like you say, a bit of a, not even a boss rush, but it was just sort of one final chance to beat up lots of bad guys in one place. For this one, we return back to the Realm Travel Room, and Kratos and Atreus learn they still can't travel there because they need the second travel crystal, or Mimir's other eye. And he reveals that the eye was stolen by Odin, and he subsequently hid it inside the statue of Thor, which we'll remember was the one that earlier in the game got bitten in half by the world serpent and swallowed. Yeah. So in order to get it back, we need to we travel back to the central bridge, and then we obviously have to use the horn to call the world serpent and explain the situation to him. And he very helpfully decides that he's more than happy for us to row our boat into his mouth.
This version of the world serpent is a very docile creature. That's,
yeah, he's very chilled out. He's cool.
It reminded me of Mads, you was playing Ocarina of Time last night.
Yeah,
Lord Yabu. Doing exactly the same thing. Yes. Going into Jabu Jabu.
Yes. But I had to give him a fish before he opened his mouth. Jormungandr just did it because we were nice.
Yeah, didn't have to give him anything.
We got the message for the point of no return just before we sounded the horn. Did you?
Yes, that's right.
Yeah. That's true. Yeah, that's very true. Actually, that was quite useful. I liked it. I like it when a game does it. We've talked about this in the past when games, even just earlier on, and lock you into a critical
on the
path.
Coaster.
Mm. Yeah, and it is, because it may just be that you got one or two little things. I was in two minds at this point as to whether to push on and kind of do all the additional content. But then I thought, I run the risk of burning out on the game and then it being a bit of a damp squib and you ultimately finish it off. But I took the opportunity just to kind of upgrade it, maybe a couple bit more bits of armor and stuff like that. I don't think there was a huge amount left for me to do. But
upgrades are really expensive, though, by this point, aren't they? And you need a lot of stuff that you can only get from, like, Niflheim.
Yeah,
and
Niflheim or...
Niflheim.
Niflheim. They... I don't know about you guys. Like, do you get like a little pang of anxiety when you know, like,
yes,
just like a little bit of a kind of like.
I always stop there and I sit and I sweat in my hands for 2 minutes, thinking, should I? Shouldn't I? I want to see where the story is going, but maybe I need to.
A little bit of sadness as well.
I think that's
like,
more that. That this is it. Once it's done, that kind of closes the door. You can never play it for, well, not that I was necessarily playing it for the first time, but you realize that that's going to be the end of your first time playing it. And
but it was easy in this game because you guys revealed that we could still frolic after if we needed to. So
And again,
it basically locks you into the end of the story, doesn't it?
Mm.
Yeah. But I like games that do that. I like games that allow you to frolic post game. But I also like it to be post-game because I do like it the likes of Clair Obscur, where you could never finish the game. There was always the final boss battle.
Mm. Yeah.
And I don't like it where, having completed a game, if you then come back into your save file, you're just prior to the final confrontation. It's like, no, I want to be in the post-game world.
Yeah. That's it. That's what you've worked for the last 30, 40, 50 hours, whatever it is, towards. And then they take you. You're working towards seeing the world in a better place, then you sort of taken away from you a little bit, isn't it?
And this game actually does it because as you wander around the world post like the end of the game and the credits, like there are little reactions. Like I went back into the Witch's Cave,
okay,
and Mimir says, "Do you really want to be here?" So it's quite good. Like Breath of the Wild does it as well. One of the absolute classics where that puts you back as well, puts you back in the world just before you went into
just before the castle,
Hyrule Castle. Yeah,
it does.
It's a bit inelegant when it does.
I think that's it. It's like they didn't know how to wrap it up, or that they didn't have an explanation for how life could continue.
Couldn't be bothered.
I think
it is a tough one though, isn't it? Because in another way, there'll also be people saying, "I want to redo the final boss fight."
Yeah, but I think almost like
not in this game.
No, not in this game. And also that maybe if you really want to, is it? Yeah, but also to my mind, it's the sort of thing that you can maybe revisit all the key locations, and there might be something like a realm tear orb that's there or something. So that if you want to go back in and get the audience, like, you know, do you want to retrigger this encounter? Do you want to reach? So that's quite nice when you can. I like the world to exist, like you say. I like the world to reflect everything that I've done in it.
Even if then it doesn't change state after that, like the fact that you can wander around the world and see reactions to what you've done is quite nice.
I agree. So having kind of agreed to swallow us effectively,
just to make sure I've not missed anything, we still don't know who blew the horn the last time, do we?
No.
Right, okay, carry on.
No. So we paddle off into the World Serpent's mouth to retrieve the eye from, well, we need to find a statue inside it. So it's quite cool. We initially go in and then it goes, you've always got the daylight that's there from his mouth, but then as you go deeper and deeper, it goes almost into pitch black, and then it starts to light up again deeper into him. And there's not a huge amount in here. There's, when you're sort of, inside the serpent, there's a sort of effect, like a spinning platform puzzle that you need to do to recover the eye from the treasure chest. There wasn't a huge amount to it, but the main thing is that once we've got that eye and we're starting to make our way back out, then the serpent and you in your boat is suddenly massively rocked, and you know, I think we could obviously work out pretty quickly what was happening. And
was everyone expecting Balder? Because part of me was expecting Thor.
Yeah, me too. I was hugely disappointed when we were facing Balder again.
That didn't occur to me. I just assumed it'd be Balder. Yeah.
Okay. I can't remember the first time. Obviously, this time around, I knew it was Balder. What did you guys make of the inside of the, you know, I'm not, like, this sounds a bit weird to say, but like, there's a few games where you go into the belly of a creature. Mm. And I don't think I can't think of one example where I actually like the area.
Lord Yabu Yabu was better than this, I think. This was very, it was just a river.
It's the worst dungeon in the game.
It's the worst dungeon in the game. It's like one of the only missteps in that game.
Yeah.
It looks horrible.
But it's more fun than this.
It was a really weird thing to do, wasn't it? Like, I don't know. Didn't really work for me.
I guess maybe, I don't know if it's, is there anything in Norse mythology about, are there any stories of somebody going inside Jormungandr?
No, not to my knowledge, at least.
I mean, it's probably, I guess.
Jormungandr isn't a docile creature in any way, shape or form. It's a beast. So
yeah,
it kills anything.
I don't know, it's
kind
of like,
close to.
I don't know, even like thinking like something that, you know, kind of like, even in the
Pinocchio.
I was about to say it, the animated version of Pinocchio.
Yeah, he goes inside the whale, doesn't he, in Pinocchio?
So there's probably, it's there in kind of folklore tales, isn't it, of going inside whales or going inside giant beasts type thing. So it's probably a bit... Yeah, I don't know, I agree from the point of view that it's... given some of the areas.
I didn't need to chase down another MacGuffin. Like, spoilers for my summing up. Like, I love this game. I absolutely love it. But by the end of it, like, you are a bit fatigued about, like, and now you need another thing. Mm. Like, it seems like the majority of the game, you're looking for the thing. And then when it got to this point, it was like, oh, really? Can't he just go, like, why?
It isn't all games like this. I mean, it's...
but this is extreme. Like, there are about six different things.
Yeah,
this. And
Like,
it'd almost be better if it gave you... Right, to get to Jotunheim, you need this, off you go.
Yeah, but then it's just a big fetch quest, isn't it?
So I suppose, yeah.
You know, I don't know. Like, this game does not need any padding. Like, it's a long game. Even if you mainlined, if you just did story, you're probably still looking at 20 hours.
At least.
If you just literally did the story. Doesn't need a bit of a filler section where you go into the belly of the beast, to my mind.
But it wasn't that long, at least.
No. I thought it was all right as a set piece.
It was fine.
Back to the Balder, when we started being attacked from outside, from the belly of this beast, I was certain it would have been Thor, because he's the only one who would be strong enough to shake the beast.
I was going
to
say, because it felt like if you looked at how much the serpent was recoiling or moving each time it was getting hit, and you know the size of it, then you're probably look, in hindsight, it would have made more sense for it to have been Thor. Or,
you know, and at the same time, if you know the mythology, you'll know that Thor hates Jormungandr and has tried to kill him a few times.
And he fights the giants, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Is it? Yeah.
Yeah. So I was certain it was Thor, and I was very disappointed to meet Baldur yet another time.
Yeah. Well, that's it. So it's he basically hits him a final time and forcing Jormungandr to spit us out, and then we all land up on kind of an icy plateau, and it basically triggers the game's final boss battle for us. Mm-hmm. And I actually really liked the final encounter.
Really?
It was great. Yeah, I loved it. I thought it was great.
Again, good set piece.
Seriously?
Very cinematic.
I thought
yeah.
it was so extremely boring. I did it all in for the first go. He didn't get me below half health. It was just
I think by this point I was just more enjoying sort of the cinematic aspect of it than anything else. I didn't want to fail this. This is not something that we wanted. We've talked about this about other both this game and other games where key moments I think you need to be doing them first time, and I think because of the level that most of us had come into this, maybe compared to the average playthrough, then you'd be hard pressed to fail it, I think. But it's quite good.
Baldur fights, Andy, are like a cinematic events, aren't they? Yeah. Rather than gameplay boss battles. Mm. I just spent 2 hours on Sigrun. So,
so that was a nice change.
Ultimate boss. So having a more of a cinematic narrative
final battle, I really have it.
And I love Baldur. I think he's a brilliant character, brilliantly played.
It's good. And we see another good confrontation between him and his mother Freya here. And what becomes apparent will just be an internal source of conflict and hatred from him to her, and probably an irreparable cycle between the two of them, with her basically pleading with Kratos not to fight him or not to kill him, not to harm him. And
yeah, not only pleading with him, but actually trying to hurt us with the
event. Yeah,
she animates the giant. Wasn't that the giant that had the chisel? Actually,
she animates the corpse and tries
to kill us with it.
Yeah, and again, just adding to the spectacle of this scene, where the point at which that giant comes to life and you know his big head comes rearing up, and we've talked about it previously, but just again the sense of scale and a proper giant by our kind of probably more the our sort of traditional understanding of what a giant is, and it's there. And it's good. I really, really enjoyed this. But kind of key points of the fight really are that during the fight, Baldur goes to punch Atreus and looks like he's actually really hurt him initially. But then when he stands back, you realize that it's actually Baldur that's hurt himself, and you can see ultimately that way back, which we alluded to previously, but the mistletoe arrowhead that Kratos had used to repair the strap is right where Baldur's punched him, and it's effectively pierced his hand when he's punched him, which ultimately breaks Freya's spell of invulnerability and allows Kratos to now subsequently start damaging him and ultimately defeating him. But, you know, throughout all of this encounter, Freya's pleading with us not to kill him particularly, but it kind of comes to a bit of a head when initially it looks as though Kratos is obviously pretty determined to kill him, but at the same time he does seem to be listening. He seems to be coming around to Freya's way of thinking, and then obviously Baldur goes to kill his mother anyway, and I think that's at that point that Kratos realizes that it's Baldur's probably a lost cause, and
he walks away, doesn't he? He walks away. Like Atreus makes him, says something to him, and says, "We don't have to do this," and then he walks away.
Yeah.
That was a callback to Atreus was saying what his father said to him when he killed somebody.
Yeah, I thought that was good. I think as well, like, there's a lot of talk, isn't there, at the moment about when the God of War games are going to get turned into this TV series. I think it'll be good to see it on a TV screen, but you lose so much when you're not controlling the characters. It was the same with The Last of Us, and something like this, it just won't have the same impact when you're not controlling the characters.
She's amazing. Like the actress who plays Freya, just amazing.
Well, like, it's a great scene, isn't there? When
I love it.
It culminates with Kratos coming back and breaking Baldur's neck and
because he
killing
damsels
him.
Her, doesn't he? And she hates it. She hates the fact he's trying to save her. Like, and protect
her. And I think it's you, Chris, that's previously talked about the voice acting on.
I don't think she hates being damseled in any way. She hates the fact that she'd rather die than Baldur die. That's.
But she says, doesn't she, that she doesn't need to be protected?
Yeah, because she'd rather die.
Yeah, than Baldur die.
Yeah,
maybe you're right.
Yeah.
Yep, and then, which we don't yet at this point know the full background to Freya, do we?
Don't we?
Well,
at this point, we know what they want to tell us, don't we?
We know she was married to Odin.
Yes.
And we saw in Hel these shadow pictures of her and Baldur and their relationship.
We know she was Valkyrie.
Well, she was ultimately Queen of the Valkyries, wasn't she?
Queen of Valkyrie. Mm.
And she was banished, wasn't she? Well, and then she was sort of, she wasn't allowed to leave.
Yep. And what, Odin
was Freya Queen of the Valkyries?
She was.
Oh my god, that's so stupid.
In this words, yeah. And Odin ultimately tore her wings off as well. But
so I must have blocked that out. This whole last part was
well,
so bad.
I don't think you did, Matt, because I think that's an incidental conversation that you get with Mimir.
Mimir,
it is.
Because
it's as you're beating the Valkyries, isn't it? Mm. I think
it was either then or it might have even, it was either the case, I maybe got it when I was just wandering around in the
underworld or the
the realm travel area.
Tells a lot of stories there.
You always get through it. I can't remember if it was there or if it was in a boat, but it's basically some additional information that you get, but it really adds weight. You maybe at that point, like you were half expecting her to be, to my mind at least, given how she'd been up until that point, and especially because we know that she's human more than anything else, was that you were kind of expecting her to be distraught more than it, which she clearly was about Baldur's death, but you were expecting her to be a bit more emotional about it. But it's a different type of, it's the absolute
fury.
I love the way, again, we've talked about this before, but it's when it's underplayed.
Yeah, it's quiet.
And she's like, I will rain down every fury on you. But like, just like, she's not,
it's
like,
so cool.
She's not screaming at it, but you can see the way that she delivers it, you can see it's something that she's very familiar with. Yeah. You know, this is not her first rodeo in terms of when it comes to dishing out this sort of pain. It's something that is that she's done many, many times before.
And it's so cool, like, that Kratos is the god of war, and she just looks him in the eye, and just in a quiet voice, and the music kind of softens.
Yeah.
Like, and you just know that she means every little word.
Yeah. It's intimidating, isn't it? Like,
yeah.
Like,
no,
this is like the god of war.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
It's
and
quite
he's
chilling.
Scared. Like, he looks, like, the facial capture is brilliant because Kratos looks scared of her.
You can see it. You can see, I mean, they've talked about it, and he's lectured Atreus endlessly about it, about the consequences of killing gods. And I think he realizes that she's not somebody you want to make an enemy of. He probably knew that before, but I don't necessarily knew. I didn't get the impression that he expected the reaction he got from her.
No.
I think he maybe thought that she was going to be,
she'd come round.
Yeah, that she would be ultimately glad it.
Am I the only one who didn't think it was bloody stupid the way she reacted, because he actually saved her life and the alternative would have been death?
No, I mean, I think this. Okay. No, but I don't. Yeah, I think there is one reading it like that. But she, as you said, Matt, I mean, she wanted, she would rather die than.
Yes, but him. Again, that's horribly, if reading into the story as this is, forgetting anything about anything else, but reading into this story, the narrative that they've built up, she knows that she's hurt her son very much by giving him the life that she gave him.
Yeah.
So why wouldn't she give him peace? Why would she want to die and make him suffer even more?
I didn't know if it was maybe because
I thought
she
it was
still
so
hasn't
this
I wonder if it's because she still hasn't accepted the fact that she maybe still thinks that he'll come around to seeing what she did for him as a good thing.
So.
And that,
I don't think so, mate. That's why she's accepting that he can kill her. That's how I read it anyway.
The spell had been broken by this point as well, so yeah. Presumably he was free of the curse and inverted commas.
Yeah, because he keeps saying, doesn't he, I've never felt so alive.
Yeah, he loves it.
Yeah, it could be. But still, I mean, what he wants is to die, and she doesn't.
Yeah.
And then Kratos saves her, and then she's mad. I found it incredibly stupid. It doesn't lead into anything good, and it only gets worse a few minutes down the line.
Well, on that note, we move on to effectively what's largely the end game content and serves as a bookend to our journey back from it started.
Turns out the giants are actually wise and the good guys. Giants are trolls and ogres, and they like to fight and make havoc. That's what they do. I found this funny.
One story, Matt.
Yes.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Accepted by millions for generations, but that's not the point. That's not the point.
Look at the BFG.
Yeah. So this is the final main story mission, and it gives us the opportunity for Kratos and Atreus to fulfill Faye's dying wish. So following the defeat of Baldur, we use Mimir's eye to travel back to Jotunheim and scatter her remains from the highest peak in all the realms. When we get to Jotunheim, we see that we make our way up through, well, first and foremost, we realize that there's no giants, and it looks like there hasn't been any for the longest time. It is basically a barren wasteland with very little by way of any sign that there's been anything happening there.
Lots of dead giants everywhere.
Lots of dead giants, yeah, but nothing by way of any signs of life whatsoever. It's kind of
I found it funny that all of the giants all over were huge. I mean, we just told that giants weren't that giant in this game. Everything here was house-sized and lying
people
over
forget
mountains.
These things, Mads. If they're anything like me, they forget they were told that 5 minutes previously. Okay. And a giant is a big person.
Yes.
So I need to see big people to know I'm there.
They explain that, don't they, that some giants weren't physically giant.
It's just different types of giants,
of course,
right?
But we see lots and lots of dead giants, no small ones. Only the huge ones. Everywhere.
Maybe they're under the big ones.
Yeah, that could be
the
it.
The small ones
course.
Decompose.
They decompose quicker, yes. Don't they? Because there's less of them.
Makes sense.
The big ones fell on the small ones. So
that could work.
Big ones ate the small ones before they fell.
That can work.
Yeah, they ran out of food. Yeah, there we are. Problem solved. See? It's always a logical explanation for these things. So when we get in here, we make our way up through this ruined temple, and within it, we find all these murals that reveal Faye's true nature, and also, more importantly, the story of Kratos's and Atreus's own journey. And it reveals that Faye was actually a giant herself, named Laufey the Just, and she had accurately predicted and depicted also every step of their journey, including their meeting with the World Serpent, the final battle with Baldur, and it's all on sort of a final mural that's up on the wall. When we get up there, we then go out to the...
It kind of works against also poor Kratos, who's made a huge speech to his son about how destiny is not a thing. We make our own destiny. But lo and behold... It was right there on that wall.
It's all there, all laid out.
Poor Kratos.
Yeah, no, exactly that. And I think you could see he's scratching his head, probably questioning his marriage as well at the same time. Where it's like, how did you keep all this from me? So it's...
I thought it was quite an emotional scene, though. They're sort of... They're uncovering this together, aren't they? Because Kratos had no idea that she was a giant.
But how does... So she'd mapped out like their journey.
Yeah.
Though, right.
Yep.
How did she do that?
But obviously she could see the future, so she's probably done that hundreds of years
before she met Kratos, or she went back to the giant realm at some point before she died.
Yeah, but how did she? Is it time travel or is it like seeing the future?
I think it's seeing the future. That's how I read it anyway.
are giants known for their ability to see the future?
Hell no.
It's a genuine question.
Hell no.
I love the atmosphere and the mood and everything about it. Yeah. Like, I didn't really understand kind of...
So yeah, seeing the future and so on, there is very much destiny and that kind of stuff in Norse mythology. I mean, so seeing the future is definitely something that some could do, gods, not giants, and well, perhaps there could be some witches among the giants actually who would be able to do that. I mean, take Ragnarok for one. It's a huge story about exactly what's going to happen at the end of days, for example. So that's seeing the future. Somebody saw that at some point. So that is definitely part of the mythology. So she could have been a witch, I guess, in some way.
And Kratos's Norse name is written on the wall, isn't it?
Was it? I forget.
Yeah. Yeah, because I think there is also a... I think once Atreus is going ahead, is in a hidden mural that reveals itself because the flag drops down a little bit and it appears to show him dying or dead in Atreus's arms. Yeah. So it makes you wonder as to... Because I think he almost half alludes to it as well, is that I think just before you exit out onto the summit, I think he says something along the lines of, "Let us do this now while I still have strength," or something.
That's it. Yeah, while I've still got strength, or while I've still got the energy, or something.
Yeah, while I've still got the strength, and it made you sound, or it just caught my attention. I thought that's the first time that he's given any insight to the fact that, and I just thought, maybe is it the case that, you know, he's exhausted from the journey, or is he aware of some failing of his own or his ability? I'm not entirely sure. So,
isn't it referred to as, is his name Forbauti or Farbauti? Or
there is a historical name, at least. I forget if Kratos was called that.
I didn't write it down. I'm sorry,
it's Kratos, on the wall. I'm sure it's on the wall in that temple.
Okay,
I
was focusing on what they call Atreus.
Well, on that note, yes. So we also find that Atreus has been referred to the giants by a different name. Mm. But I think it's one that's not particularly important in Norse mythology, or I think he's very sort of a bit part character. It's some guy called Loki.
Loki. Yes, the father of Jormungandr, for example.
Yes, we find out that he's Loki, which is obviously a character. I think that, even if you've not heard of any of Norse mythology's characters, everybody, I think, is aware of Loki. Yeah.
So this was why I introduced myself as all along I've actually been Judas, because it's the same thing happening here right now. He's there, Judas. He's a trickster. He's actually trying to be, well, not trying, he's pretending to be a good guy, and Odin likes him, but he is a trickster, and he makes lots of mischievous stuff, like killing Baldur or making Baldur's brother kill Baldur, and so on and so forth. So right now, at this point in time, before Ragnarok, he would be lying in a cave somewhere where the venom of deadly vipers will be dripping into his eyes all the time, because that's where he's supposed to be until the end of days, when he breaks free and joins the giants to fight in Ragnarok.
So. And... So you were saying, Matt, that this for you, we know the reasons why. Well, we don't necessarily. That maybe the listeners don't know the reasons why. Is that obviously Norse mythology has formed a very important part of your childhood, and then obviously just continuously this was a step too far in terms of what they've done and where they've gone with it.
I've given up. Far before this, they've been. Bastardizing everything about the Northern mythology for a long time. I mean, the first episode we recorded, lots of stuff were actually kind of right and in the right vein. And from there on, it's just been worse and worse and worse. I put down the controller, I turned off the game and thought, well, that was a shitty ending all the way through, because I didn't like the fact that I was fighting Baldur in the end. I didn't feel the whole Baldur Freya thing, because I thought it was so stupid, the way that she reacted in the end. And I didn't feel it was that well acted, to be honest. It wasn't credible to me. And then that he was Loki. I mean, they've changed so much but taking a small kid and saying this is Loki, the character that is so incredibly important for all the other stuff, for leading to Ragnarok, for example, that is now happening because the Fimbul winter has started as well. It was a put down the controller, and I don't really want to see this game again for a while moment for me.
But if it could, this might be a stupid question, but can't he just be, does he have to be the Loki?
There is no a Loki. There is not? The Loki. There's only Loki.
There's numerous Chrises.
Yes, true, true. But the way that this was, I'm pretty sure, let's see, in Ragnarok, I'm pretty sure this was presented as Loki.
But this is like, I'm really ignorant on my part, Mads. Like, is with Norse mythology, is it like a defined, all the characters like have a defined story, or is it, is it something which I presume it is, or like something like in, say, Legend of Zelda, where you've got the characters, but then
like a campfire,
but then there might be a different interpretation of a Link and a Zelda, or
no, they've all got their story, and then it's it was a lot of this was written down many many years ago and found on old rune stones and so on and so forth, but they all got their stories, and they are more or less the same between the different sources telling it.
So kind of like an accepted version of each character and their history.
Loki is the trickster. He's a blood brother of Odin and grew up with Odin and was therefore accepted in Asgard, but nobody liked him. His home would have been in Jotunheim, I guess.
So why can't he be Loki?
So why he can't be Loki? Because it's because of time. Because so much has happened that Loki is supposed to have done. For example, be the father of Jormungandr, and the Fenris wolf.
Well, Jormungandr did say he recognized him. Maybe he was like, maybe in his own language, you think, Daddy. Yes.
Who knows? Could it be a reincarnation of the Loki?
Yeah, but there's no reincarnation.
There might be.
well, not in Norse mythology. if you're a Hindu, for sure.
Yeah, that's it. It's.
But there's no reincarnation. I was thinking about that as well when they said it. No, you can't get reborn as anything. No.
Yeah, I think for us, like, I don't know. Clearly, I don't know my arse from my elbow when it comes to Norse mythology, but I only know the very, very high level details. Like, to my mind, and this is not someone who's grown up surrounded by the mythology, like, it's just a story. So, like, you just...
That's kind of where I was...
Do you know what I mean? It's not really a big deal.
I suppose the difficulty they've got when making a game like this is the very large majority of the people who play the game will not be overly familiar, and some will be completely unfamiliar with Norse mythology. And so, because I was thinking about actors, I think maybe in their defence... One of the challenges they would have would be that which it sounds like they could have told so many cool stories, but they would have been known stories. And I guess for them, it's where do you put that hook or that plot twist or a reveal that if it's a telling of a Norse story that you could go and Google it before you even play the game and you think, this is what's going to happen. Whereas with this game, even if you knew, like Mads, if you know the Norse mythology inside out, I appreciate that it probably detracts from it in some respects, but it does mean that the game still has some surprises for you. You're not just playing a script, and they've maybe tried to be a bit more, put their own spin on things without maybe kind of necessarily kind of
upsetting.
As you say, I think it seems to be they've gone with a line of an interpretation rather than a telling of the source material.
Yeah. So to be honest, it doesn't upset me. It annoys me sometimes. And then I'll put it away for a little while because these are some stories I grew up with. But I totally understand what they've done and why they've done it. There are lots of places, like 50-60% of the stuff that they made weird, they could have just kept the real stories because they would have been better. But they needed to change a lot of it because Kratos' story is the story of all gods are bastards. So they need all of the gods to be bastards. And then we need to hate all of the gods. So of course, they couldn't just tell the story of the Asgardian gods because they weren't bastards, all of them. Some were. I mean, Thor could be a right bastard, so he could have been the main antagonist, I guess. But, I mean, they had to change a lot to make the God of War story work.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure they did that. I know quite a lot of Greek mythology as well, so it'd be fun to play original God of War, because they probably did lots and lots of changes there as well, because they wanted all the gods.
I was going to ask that, how closely the original game stuck to
probably
Greek mythology.
Not very closely. I wouldn't
say
so.
It's just a basis.
Yeah, exactly.
For it,
right? And that is just fine. And I think it's been really good fun playing this beautiful game set in the Norse mythology. I love the depiction of Freya. She's beautiful and very well done. And I hated Baldur, because that was just so wrong. and I found him a bit boring, to be honest.
I guess it is the disappointment, I guess, maybe comes from a point as well, is that if it's a story that you know so well, then maybe like the thought of actually playing, when you look at how good this game looks, being able, if you were to play, if they'd made a very faithful telling of these stories in that game's engine,
that would have been
imagine,
so good.
Yeah, so I'd imagine if for a fan or somebody who knows and understands and appreciates the sort of the original mythology, then it'd be so cool playing through. It's like getting a game off your favorite book or whatever. We've all got something that we absolutely love that we would just. Mine's Top Gun. I'm still waiting for the ultimate Top Gun game to come out. It'll exist one day. It'll come out, but you know what I mean. It's a sense that
Afterburner.
Yeah, that's good. It's probably got, I think Afterburner's got more story than Top Gun does, to be honest. It's everybody's got something, or you know, a childhood story, or anything, a tale that, you know, if you were to have a faithful recreation of that, then to you it'd just be the, you know, it'd be such a nice thing to play through.
So many good fun stories they could have told, but it wouldn't have been the God of War story, because God of War has
that
to
is
be
the that is the thing, isn't it?
Did
Kratos is a fictional character, that, and it's his story really, and that is that's a problem with the Greek mythology stuff, because you know Kratos didn't kill Zeus and whatnot, and you know, so liberties, I suppose, it's based on a platform of liberty taken with the storytelling.
Yeah.
Did you?
And that's fine. That's just fine.
Did any of you do any of the reading as to how it was received at the time in terms of its telling of the mythologies? Because it'll be interesting though, because I guess there was a reasonable amount of time between obviously its release and then Ragnarok coming out. It'll be interesting to see whether what direction they take and whether it follows it anymore. I appreciate they've drawn a line in the sand, and there's certain things that they can't redact, or there's certain things that they can't roll back on with the way the direction they're taking, or just by naming some of the characters that certain assumptions are now going to be made as to who they are and what they are. But it'll just be interesting to see how faithful or otherwise the sequel is.
Yeah, I had a little look on some Reddit forums and stuff like that, and it looks like I couldn't find a huge amount of criticism about the storytelling, but there was a lot of confusion. Like, what? You know, what if he's that, then what does that mean? And, you know, the stuff about being the father of Jormungandr and stuff like that was...
No, I remember my oldest picked up God of War a few years ago, started playing, and put down the controller after a few hours because she just thought the narrative was too silly for her. So I guess if you do know the stories, the liberties they've taken can be a bit too much. But for me, I think it's been fine. My problem with the ending isn't actually the way they've treated Norse mythology. It's just that I find it exceedingly boring that it seems that Freya is now, for some unfathomable, for me at least, reason, our main enemy, which is going to make for a boring game if that's what they do in Ragnarok, because nobody wants to play with Freya. So she can't rally all of the other gods against us, and that's what she's supposed to do. I wanted to face off with Odin and Thor and all of those guys instead. And I'm hoping we will get to do that, and they'll make a narrative that in some way they take back Freya or whatever, and then they're all together against us. But let's see. I just found it so unbelievable the way that Freya reacted, and I found I was so incredibly disappointed that I wasn't facing Thor at the end. Especially because we killed Thor's son. I wanted to face him.
You still might.
Well, put a pin in that, because it's having completed that, then that takes us on to the Journey's End, which is where we are now ultimately at the highest peak, and we get to go and scatter Frey's ashes overlooking the Valley of the Dead Giants. But in a nice moment that feels like it's been building the entire game, Atreus finally gets to carry the little bag of ashes.
Yeah, I like
so
that.
It's him. Yeah. And they head on, and they have like just a really nice valid. I think for the first time in the game, Kratos calls him son as well.
Yeah, that felt a little bit on the nose.
It did, for sure it did. But it's, I was kind of like, you know, I was like, oh, do you know what? We're winding things up. Let's get it all out here. Yeah. So it's that was very pleasant. And then subsequently make their way back down the mountain path to the Mystic Gateway. And during that walk, Kratos gives, they're just having a sort of a nice father to son chat. And he explains to Atreus that his name comes from a fellow Spartan soldier that was, I think, known and very well respected by Kratos, who said he was a great warrior, as they all were, but unlike his peers, he always kept his humanity and hope. And hence, that's why, well, kind of spoiled now that we know he's Loki, but never mind. We then return to Tyr's temple, and we find Mimir is there. He was basically left to be supervised by the Huldra brothers, but they subsequently ditched him, and he's just lying there on the floor. So he gets picked up and taken back. I did think, well, hopefully we'll see what maybe happens in the sequel. I was maybe hoping that it might be in some way. Oh, it's not going to be Freya that's doing it now, I guess. But I was hoping that maybe I might have been reunited with his body at some point. But not at this point. But I guess the kind of the final point of the whole is, as we return to Midgard, we find the realm covered in snow. And Mimir explains to us that Fimbul winter has begun, signifying the countdown to Ragnarok. So is it three summers of continuous winter or something?
Yeah, three full seasons of winter.
Okay, yeah.
So Mimir lost his head when there was a war between the Vanir and the Aesir. So I'm not sure his body is to be found anywhere. The Aesir gave Mimir's head back to Odin. Mimir was Odin's friend. So they gave his head back to Odin as a, well, not as a gift, but as a fuck you. Sorry. So
his body was in the tree.
I thought it was in the tree.
Oh, yeah. In our story, it was, of course.
In this
story,
at least.
I forgot that we actually seen his body. He could have been reunited with it. Sorry. Yep.
Yeah, sadly, well, not anymore.
But they'd have to pull it out of the tree somehow, wouldn't they?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, he flipped the temple, so I'm sure he could. Well, mind you, probably if he tried to pull out of the tree, he'd probably just, like, pull arms and legs off his body, and then he'd just, like, even worse.
Just stitch him back together.
Yeah.
I love the way the credits roll just as they're walking away from the peak and they're having that chat about Atreus's name, like the credits start to roll. Like it's such a like a low key ending to what is
low key.
Very good. Yeah. I wasn't even gonna go there on air. Like it's such like a quiet ending to like this epic bombastic story that I don't know, like, I loved it first time round, and I loved it again. Like, I just like the fact that it just kind of, they just wander back, and it ends, and it does cinematic.
But the only question left to ask is, did anybody return to Kratos' house?
No.
I didn't go back to Kratos' house.
Oh, go back to Kratos' house.
Really?
So yes. What's there then?
Do you want me just to tell you at this point?
Yeah. Final episode.
You return to Kratos' house. There's the option to enter his house. They basically, him and Atreus go in, and he says, like, Atreus is like, I'm going to sleep for 1,000 years or something like this. And the two of them settle down into bed, fall asleep, and then it transitions to, it looks like it's just on that night, but then it transitions to a scene where it says several years later, and it shows the two of them fast asleep in bed. And then there's this massive crack of thunder outside and all this booming, all the lights go out, and Kratos gets up out of bed and says to Atreus, wait here, boy, and runs and opens the door, and stood there out in the snow is a massive version of Thor.
No way.
It's a massive silhouette of somebody big cloak over his head, lightning cracking around him, and then all it does, the camera pans down, and you can just see him holding his hammer, and then it cuts out, and and then that's it. So
weird they would have hidden that. I mean, they should have shown that as a lead into Ragnarok.
I'm going to go and have a look at that.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. It's a very cool scene. I said, this sets up very nicely.
Well,
yeah.
So what do you mean when it cuts out? Like, what happens then?
And then, then it kind of cuts, and then I think you then... it then maybe gives you proper end game credits, I think.
Oh, wow.
Don't remember. But then I think what it then does, it then comes out and it shows you, it comes back to you in your house, and then it says something like back in the present day or something like that. So it's just, it gives you a quick flip forward to show you Thor, basically, and then comes back to the present day.
Oh, I've got to.
It's a
very, very cool moment. I mean, if that's the character design that I don't know what he would look like in sort of in the classic mythologies, but it looks like a very imposing design that they've gone for. So it's cool.
Huh? He's supposed to be big and bulky and with a huge red beard and red hair.
You can't quite see. He's got a big cloak over his head, but I think he did look like he had a big... beard. It looked like it might have been black. I'm not too sure, but it might have just been because the cloak was over his head. But he's big. He's bigger than Kratos.
Yep.
There's not even like a go back to the old house or anything. No.
I think there is.
Weird.
I think is there's there? Kind of. I think maybe as one of the final objectives that it does say something like to return home or something like that. I think it's not one that ticks off, but it does say something like. Or maybe it might just be even a throwaway comment. It's, we could always go home, or we could go and do some more exploring type thing. But I did feel it wasn't the case that they pushed it enough to go back to your house, because the fact that only one out of the four of us did suggests that they needed to make it a bit more obvious that there was like a fairly key point waiting for you there.
Cool.
That is very
cool. Yes, yep. But so that brings kind of a close to the main story.
Technically, three of us haven't finished the game, so shall we?
we'll have to do another podcast.
Come back.
Episode five. It'll be five minutes long. Right, we watched it. There we go, done. But there were just a couple of other aspects maybe we didn't have quite so much time to talk about last time, that it's now the chance to throw these in. But I'm also aware that just before maybe we give our... final thoughts on things is that we had another listener clip from Chris Atwell, who I think has been playing along, and it sounds as though he really enjoyed this. I know that he will tell us as much of this clip, but he had played it upon release much the same as I did, but he's replayed it with us this time around. Sounds like he enjoyed it just as much, if not more so, played it to a greater depth than what I did the first time around as well. And I think he has also played Ragnarok, but I think it sounds so he's very keen to play it. So let's listen to Chris and get his thoughts on his experience with God of War. So here we go.
Hey lads, it's Chris Atwell. Just want to share my thoughts on God of War. It's nice to be back playing the games with you guys again and joining with everyone on Discord. It's been interesting to see people's takes on it. I know some people have enjoyed it more than others. I know some people have been a bit put off by some of the mechanics and some of the combat initially. I was sort of hoping that people would stick with it and they'd see the light. I think a lot of people have. I have had nothing but fun with this game. I played it in 2018 when it was released. I was looking at my trophy list. And I think I started playing it in like April and May, something like that, when it came out, and finished it pretty quickly. So I knew what to expect, but I've done a bit more this time. I've beat a few Valkyries and I'm on beating the rest of them, and probably going to go through and try and get Platinum, be like a third Platinum after the two Horizon games. So I'm going to have a go for that. I really enjoyed just revisiting some of the stuff, because I'd forgotten a lot of it. And a lot of it was sort of blended in with my memories of Ragnarok, which I played the year before last. So I've enjoyed revisiting the areas again, to see what it's like in the first game. Reeling in the combat, really getting acquainted with some of the finer details of what you can do. Trying to do a bit more, using the runic powers and stuff like that, which I didn't really do a lot of, which kind of... you need to in this to get past some of the Valkyrie battles. I think without having a complete meltdown. But yeah, I mean, it doesn't have the depth of something like God of War, but it's good. And yeah, I've really enjoyed it. Enjoyed your breakdown and analysis of the game as usual. And yeah, looking forward to what we're playing next. Yeah, so cheers, boys. And I'll see some of you at the weekend.
Thanks very much to Chris for taking the time to contribute so much to our play along, but then also to take a couple of minutes to record his thoughts. And as he said, very much looking forward to seeing him at the weekend as well this weekend. So
yeah,
it'd be nice to catch up with him. Yeah, so I can see that brings a wrap. Sadly, the actual kind of the sort of step by step. Story of or our step-by-step account of the story, but with a couple of additional elements that was very much optional side content, but I think by the sounds of things quite a lot of us dabbled with. So we touched on Muspelheim a wee bit last time, but maybe since then a couple of us have gone back in and finished off the additional challenges. It was, to my mind, it was just more of the same. There wasn't really anything particularly stand out from that sort of things. I think the one thing we'd maybe not done so much with last time around was Niflheim. Mm.
Niflheim.
I really didn't like Muspelheim.
Yeah.
Really didn't like it.
I didn't like it as much. I didn't like it as much as Niflheim. Definitely not.
Same. I much preferred Niflheim.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. It felt like it was an area, it's really cool area, and then they've put this Valkyrie on the top and you've got to work, you're working your way up the mountain, and that all feels really cool. And then it's like, what do we do? How do we make this interesting?
It was so fun. There were all twists on the combat mechanic. I mean, kill them while they're standing in this circle, or only use this move. And it was fun. I liked it.
The fun didn't.
Okay.
Didn't click for me.
It was the other way around, Jim. It's like they wanted to put in almost like a Colosseum kind of area, like a combat trial. You know, the question in my mind is, should they have put a Valkyrie on top of it? And I've got that question about Niflheim as well. But to my mind, like having an area like a Colosseum where you can just, you know, very, very optional. You know, I didn't find any of the challenges particularly difficult.
No. That 100 enemy challenge, I was down to like a fraction of health by the end of it.
But did you do it on the first go?
First go, yeah. But
that was satisfying.
It was panicking. Yes,
it's supposed to be.
For me too. Hands gaming trademark.
Like the worst one was to not take any damage.
So many goes.
Yeah, because there's it's Stone Ancient or whatever it is that comes out at the end, isn't there? And I kept forgetting to block in time.
Yeah.
And it would be the final enemy, and I'd be too late to put my I'd run instead of putting my shield up for some reason, and I'd take one of those hits from the ice balls, and that would be it. Yeah. And the worst part is it actually takes a few seconds. It pauses for a few seconds.
I know. I've got away with it.
Yeah, and I thought I was fine. It didn't notice, and then it was it failed, and you'd have to start all over again. Yeah.
And I don't know if this is some weird ingrained muscle memory that I've got from the Souls games, but on that one particularly where you can't take any damage, I would panic and I press circle instead of X to do the dodge.
Oh, no.
Yeah. I don't know if that's like some ingrained like muscle memory or something.
That'll come in handy very soon then.
Yeah, maybe.
The beauty of it is that like there's no, you know, Mads made this point last time about, you know, with the Valkyries, you know, with there being no run-up. The beauty about those challenges, it's almost like Meat Boy, you know, you kind of fail, you immediately can just go again.
Yeah. You're quite right, by the way. We talked about it last time. You do keep your resurrection stones and your, I don't know why I thought that wasn't the case, but thankfully you do. Otherwise it would have been a very long slog with some of the Valkyries.
You go in with everything as it is the first time that you go in.
But I totally see how you can have a bad experience and a bad time in Muspelheim. But it's like we've talked about so many times before with games. If you do it in a few goes and it feels good and it feels like you've been doing some good gaming here, it's good fun. But if there's one of the challenges you need to try 10 times or even more, then that sours the entire experience.
Yeah,
I guess I was lucky because there was no challenge I had to do more than three times, perhaps. So.
But it's completely optional. Like, I think that is a problem with, like, the narrative bits, you know, when you're forced to retry them over and over again. But here, you know, these are meant to be tough, you know, especially, I was quite disappointed, like, the impossible trials, like, I did them all first time and...
I think the problem is that by saying it's optional, though, is that they're optional until you try them.
Yeah, well, this is your philosophy.
Yeah.
And there's a Valkyrie at the end.
That Valkyrie carrot gets dangled, doesn't it?
Speaking of which, I am very, very grateful that I... So I had a look to see whether or not I'd done everything and subsequently realised that there are some pretty... So there's a whole new world of stuff in New Game Plus, and you can get Zeus's armor, but you basically have to play back through the entire game again, and there's a whole lot of new challenges. But there's one there's a trophy. It's not included in the platinums or anything, but there's a trophy for finishing it on a New Game Plus on the hardest difficulty. And I said, this is ridiculous. That's such an obscure one. That's largely
on it. That's brutal. I'd love to know what the little percentage is for players that have achieved
that. It's not a trophy that counts. It's not like a PSN trophy, is it? It doesn't count to the platinum.
No, but I think there's something that you get within the game that you have to finish a unique piece of armor or something, I think. Yeah. I was so close to starting a New Game Plus. And I was like, don't do it. Don't do it. Because
Move on and save Andy.
It's a slippery slope because all the boxes were nicely ticked, and I thought if I start a New Game Plus here, all those boxes are going to be unticked again, and you've got to start the process all over again.
Walk away.
But you guys had a wee bit of time in Niflheim as well, didn't you?
Mm. Yeah.
Thoughts on Niflheim?
I'll go because I was quite positive. I thought it was all right. It felt like there was a bit more. This is probably a really bad thing to say. I felt like there was a bit more effort put into Niflheim compared to Muscle Fine. Yeah. One thing I didn't like was it's procedurally generated, isn't it? In terms of the unlockables, you need an unlockable to...
The only thing that's random is the enemies that you encounter and
the layout of the maze.
No, there's an item that you need to collect to upgrade some armor that I still haven't got because it's random whether it appears in the treasure chest.
The things are random as well, like which threats you will face when.
Yeah, so like the transitions, the transitions between each arena will change each time you go into
those traps between the arenas.
But the pattern,
I was getting myself in a right fankle until Chris pointed out that it's just a loop.
That loop doesn't change,
and then that made a lot of sense once I thought, right, okay, if I just keep going the same way there,
But
in fairness, it's one of these things. It was quite Dark Soulian in the sense that the first couple of attempts I went there, I was like, this is ridiculous. There's no way I'm going to spend the amount of time that's going to be needed to get the mist echoes that you were collecting. Also, I was like, how can you possibly remember how can you work out your way around here? But in fairness to its design, I actually think it was quite well designed in the sense that after maybe a wee bit of time, maybe half a dozen runs, it started to click a little bit, and then it got to a point where you could actually go in and quite quickly. And one feeds into the other. I think the problem, the temptation is to just try and get as many Mist Echoes as quick as possible and open the chests as quick as possible or open the realm tiers as quick as possible. Whereas I think in actual fact, what the game needs you to be doing is you need to invest that in your armor. Yeah. And then the more successful runs you do, you start to get some of the enchantments that give you the further protection. So I think by the end, I had three or four of those in my armor, as well as it all upgraded the
mist sort of
that glowing green mist armor. Yeah. To the point that...
Yeah, mist is relevant.
But it's you could... You would run out of time, but there was plenty of...
Enemies.
Yeah. And then you could then end up doing a full loop and collecting everything. And I actually thought I'd done quite well. I think the most I managed to get was just over 10,000 mist echoes. And I thought I'd absolutely rinsed it. And then Mop and Post, he got like over 20,000 on one of his runs.
That's a hell of a run, that. 20,000? I didn't get anywhere near that.
That's just luck, though. And what you've got to do as well, because there's scales in the chest, so the Nornia chest will give the most amount of missed echoes, and the little brown chest will give the fewest. And it kind of increases.
It's not quite exponential, but you need to be getting the second half's worth of chest in the area on each run to start getting the, you know, rather than getting 120 or 130, you'll start getting 500, 600, 700, something like that.
Yeah, more. So what I was doing by the end of it was going around the maze, kept wiping all the enemies, opening all the small brown chests, and then looping around again, opening then the next value. Mm-hmm. I think the most I got from a Nornia chest was like 4,000 missed echoes.
Did you guys really find that funny? I mean, this is a perfect example of gameplay I hate. I mean, this is exactly the kind of game I hate. It wastes my time. It's no fun. And if I just keep doing the same thing over and over again, I'll get this little bit of extra upgrade thing. It's like playing a NAF roguelike that hasn't been designed properly.
Yeah.
So if I throw hours and hours at it, it'll get easier. I won't get better, but it will get easier.
Yeah, but the only good thing is
it's god tier gaming, Mads.
So I agree with you.
Mundane and repetitive. I love it.
And I agree with you. And I took one look at it last time and didn't go anywhere near it. This time I went in there and thought, I'm going to absolutely hate this. And for the first 20 minutes, I was like, I am hating this. I'm going to spend hours on this if I want to open everything. The only saving grace, and no, I didn't particularly enjoy it, and I wanted to get in, get the stuff and get out just as quickly as I could, beat the Valkyrie, and then I'd never want to see Niflheim again, to be honest. The only thing is, kind of once you do, and you don't need much to invest in the armor, and once you do, actually, I mean, I probably spent like 3 hours in total on Niflheim.
You need to spend an hour at least to get the armor, right?
Yeah,
I don't even think you do. I mean, each bit of armor is like 2,000 missed echoes. It's not.
Yeah, and you get like 300, 400 before you die when you've got nothing. I mean, because one battle and you're down to like a third or something like that.
Yeah, you might. Maybe it's like two or three runs to get one piece of armor, and then for the next one, it might be two runs. And then by the time you got two pieces of armor, you'll be easily getting more than enough.
What I did initially was to get a sort of a starting foot.
And never got two pieces of armor.
Where you've got that first arena,
was
I would just run down the steps, fight those guys, and run back up the steps and bank them. And just
perfect example of gameplay I hate. I mean, the worst kind of gameplay you could ever do.
Don't get me wrong, guys. There were multiple points whilst I was doing this where there was a lot of time to reflect on my life choices.
In the end, I actually got through the part that I wanted to get through. I got the Valkyrie down, but that was only because I think Chris told me on our chat that your poison meter resets when you kill the Valkyrie. So I thought, I have a chance. So I didn't kill anything except from the Valkyrie. I just legged it in there, killed her, flicked it out again.
Yeah, and in fairness, you got to Valkyrie quite quickly, didn't you? I think it was maybe after three or four arenas every time got until the Valkyrie was dead.
I think it's the third arena when you...
Yeah, I think it was the third until you have taken her out. But,
and it's quite an easy Valkyrie as well, to be fair. Like, it's not the most difficult of the Valkyries. So.
I think just for me, the nice thing, or maybe... The nice thing about doing it when I did it was I did it as post-game. So, I'm very, very glad I didn't push on with some of this stuff prior to finishing it because I think it would have really soured it. But the whole time I was playing it, I was very satisfied with the story aspect and thinking that's great. You know, from at any point from now onwards, I can just put the controller down, forget about it, and pick it up again when we get back to Ragnarok.
And that's the right way of playing an area like that. I mean, you're so right, because I was playing it while I was thinking I could advance the story instead. I could go do this instead. If you're playing it when you're loving a game, you finished it, and you want a bit more. That's a good mindset to be in this kind of area where you just need to throw yourself at it over and over again.
It isn't really that, you know, I was thinking this is going to be hours and hours and hours and hours, and really it's not.
No, it's very clever. It kind of
feels
that,
like hours here. So
yeah, it does give that impression initially that it's going to be a much longer slog than what it is. And I think especially when you're just on the cusp of being able to rinse the area fairly reliably. There was a couple of, like, there was one time when I was running back, I think, with 7,000 echoes.
I had a couple of
got squished, and I was like, oh my dear Lord, I do not have the energy to go back in.
I had a couple of moments.
A minute later, I was running around the arena again. So it's. Yep.
It's weird when something gets you like that. And I had it with Destiny when I'd be doing runs just just to try and get a certain weapon loadout. And I'd be like, what am I doing with my life?
I always find there's a tipping point in any game where, particularly if you're maybe trying to tick off all the boxes, but there'll be a point where you feel yourself getting more and more into it and you're enjoying it more and more and more and more and more. And then there's a tipping point where you go over the edge and you're like, done it again. I've gone too far. And you're like, what have I done? Like, what have I been doing?
You've done it again, Gilmore.
Yeah. I had to go away and do something completely different for a day or two.
Because I'm sand the stairs.
Yeah,
there must be some stairs needing sanded somewhere. So I'll go back to those. But it's.
Did you find, Andy, like, so there's three round tier encounters in Niflheim that you have to beat to get
there. Events. Yeah.
Well, one of them. The one with the revenants. Oh, my. I struggled. So there's two of them are really simple. I think one is just a few trolls. Another is maybe, is it a couple of soul eaters? But one of them is like a bunch of revenants and a bunch of nightmares all together.
Yeah.
I think that's the hardest encounter in the game, apart from Sigrun. I must have died a dozen times there.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, again, were you on yourself all fully upgraded armor by this point?
Not quite fully upgraded. So this was just before I basically did all of this before then rinsing the story bits at the end. So I was probably level 7.
Yeah, I think it was 8 for everything. But
the revenants were absolutely caning me.
So there was a huge difference between level 7 and 8 in the difficulty.
I think so. I just couldn't get my armor upgraded enough without doing more Niflheim grind.
I've never tried level 8, so I don't know what that is.
Yeah. Is that the top level? Is it level 8?
Well, I don't think it's like, it doesn't matter, but I'm not sure that even with a fully upgraded, can you get to level 9? Maybe you can. Mm. I don't know.
I never find any armor that went. You in much the same way as you can with, I think there's like 7+, so maybe there's an 8+.
Mm. Yeah, the returns diminish quickly though at that top.
Yeah,
end.
there's really kind of not much that. I think by that point, but
I didn't think I was going to be able to do it. I honestly, with Sigrun, I always knew that it was just a question of just practice. With those blooming revenants in Niflheim, honestly, I thought I wasn't going to do it. And in the end, I think I just got lucky. I was so relieved because at that point, I was gunning for the platinum, I have to say. I was.
So where did you come short on the platinum? Was it just the collectibles, was it?
No, I can tell myself. And then Andy can tell us kind of because he did get the platinum. Yeah, the collectibles. So I can't done everything. The only ones I haven't got are to collect all the artifacts, all the Odin's Ravens, all of the... I think it's just the two. So Odin Draven's are the artifacts. So my plan was finish the game, do everything else, and then use a guide and just go through area by area and spend an evening just doing it all.
Yeah.
First area, fine. Cleared it out. I mean, I only had like 6 Odin Draven's to find anyway. So I then went through the next area, which I think is the River Pass, which is one of the biggest areas in terms of like how many of the collectibles there are. I was going through the guide, spent about an hour, because most of them I'd already found. Going through, right, line by line, found that one, got to the end, I'd missed an artifact.
Ah, so you got to run it again.
But I didn't know which one. I didn't know which one I'd missed.
Yeah, so you got to run the whole thing again.
The only option would have been to go through the whole area again, and I would have had to have done that. Times 12. No, that was it. It was done.
Yeah.
How did you do it, Andy? Did you just use your guide and just go through systematically? And
yes and no. So the guide was a massive help, but there's still an element of basically looking for a needle in a haystack because the hardest ones to get were the artifacts and the ravens because. Yeah. Initially in the guide, so the likes of the artifacts, when you are collecting some of them, the guide refers specifically to what you're picking up. So it might say you'll then find, you know, this is where the toy boat is. And if you're scrolling the menu across to each of the artifacts pages, you can see if you've got this.
That's a good idea.
So you can see which ones you've got and which ones you don't.
Yeah.
But the guide subsequently, I think they only bothered to do it for about maybe the first area or two.
And then it just says,
and there you'll find the artifact. You're like, well, that's great, but which bloody artifact is it? Because I need to know. Especially, and so it was getting to the point where you were needing to, when you were looking at the, so the guide has got pictures of where each one is and a brief description as to the location. So I was looking at it and you could kind of remember, there was some you could instantly discount. You're like, yeah, I remember that one, remember that one, remember that one. But there was one that was in, now where was it? There was one that I spent, oh, I think it was actually one in the first area, actually. It was one of the, like a Trace's toys, or the toys are in that area. Yeah. There's one that I just couldn't for the life of me find. And I found out subsequently that I basically kept missing a path. That
I know which one. Is it the one that you go out the back of the fortress?
Yes, onto the frozen lake.
Yeah, that is a bugger.
Yes.
Yeah.
But the one thing that I would say about the whole thing, and then the ravens as well were a pain in the ass because it was
random.
It was something very similar as to trying to find the locations of them.
You don't know which ones you've missed?
No. But what it does do, I guess, is that it at least breaks it down into each area. And it'll say in the foothills, it'll have, well, what it won't, which is a wee bit annoying, is that there was a wee bit of deduction required because the more you collected of everything, the easier it got, because initially when you looked at each individual area, it would say undiscovered for some things. And then it would have things, other things, it would have things shrines or chests or whatever. And it would have 5 out of 5. 2 out of 2. And then sometimes if it was just one raven that was one in the area, you wouldn't know. And well, I guess that was easier,
but
because
you wouldn't know which raven you were missing. If it was like 7 of 8, you wouldn't know which one you were missing.
No, you don't. That's the problem. So it was just literally the case of working your way through the area. And I actually ended up giving up with the guide and just instead basically started, like you were saying, I now know that high-pitched call anywhere. It gives me sleepless nights because you were basically just running through the area waiting to hear the high-pitched pigeon call. And then you'd be... And then, but honestly, like the number of times, like there was one especially towards... I remember literally shouting at the TV, take that, you effer, when I threw the axe at it and got it, because I had spent ages, I was literally screaming at it when I threw the axe at it. But the...
It's a lot of patience, mate. I mean, good for you.
Like I say, it was very optional. There was nothing else I was particularly desperate to play at this point. But what I would say, and what I particularly liked about it, was it gives you a chance to revisit all of the environments and to re-familiarise yourself with some of these environments. And you can see just how much kind of care and attention has gone into crafting these worlds, if nothing else, is that the rest of the time you're usually focused on enemies or you're listening to some dialogue. And there was something very nice about just running through these areas, just with no incidental conversation, just kind of really paying attention to the surroundings and how it differs from area to area. And the other one thing that I would say as well, which is I found endlessly impressive, and it's I was just waiting till the end of the month I get paid to pick it up. I'm definitely going to pick up the Neil Gaiman's book of Norse mythology because it's so good. I think probably, I don't know how many lines of incidental conversation have been recorded, but I know it's 61 hours in the game, and every time I get in the boat with Mimir, He starts telling me a new story. Likewise, when you go into the realm travel area as well, he quite often gives you a wee bit of incidental conversation there. So, you know, after literally dozens of hours, to still have fresh stories and tales to tell you. And I would always sit and listen to them as well. I love listening to them. Yeah. It's really cool. And there's some great stories in there. I was just thinking, I was going to get this book and hopefully a couple of them might be child friendly, and I was thinking I can read them to the kids at night time. I dare say there's probably a few I'll have to skip over, but at the same time, lots of chat about they seem to have a fascination with smashing people's heads. There's a lot of stories of people's heads getting smashed. So
that's what happens.
They don't dress it up. It's just,
it doesn't really go down like that in Narnia. does it?
No. That's it. It's they're peacefully in their sleep. Mm. But lots of head smashing.
It's not very graphical, but it does say something like Thor smashes his skull.
Yeah, that's it. Or rips arms off people and then
not so much of that.
He ripped somebody's arm off. I'm trying to think who it was. Okay. Who was the eight armed giant? He ripped one of his arms off, apparently.
Yeah. Well, he was
kind of sort of known as the village idiot. I'm trying to think who it was.
Octaganda.
Yeah.
Well, you win this one, Andy.
Mm. How's that?
Platinum Man, you win this game.
Yeah, but again, any time I've done these, I think I've done it on Dark Souls and the Two Horizons, and they're the games that I've enjoyed. I've enjoyed the worlds the most, and they're just, to me, they're an excuse to spend more time in the game and to just kind of rinse it of all it's worth. And then, particularly, I think when you've enjoyed a game like this so much, there's something very satisfying about putting it back on the shelf and knowing
you've rinsed
that's
it.
Kind of that one's done. And particularly, I think if we go on to play the sequel, it'd be nice to know that I'm, you know, having seen just about everything that the game can see shy of a new game plus, then you know I really want to see more.
You're
off
ready
this.
For it.
Yeah, definitely. But I guess kind of out with that, was there anything else that you guys had seen or come across in your plays, or anything else that we haven't had a chance to cover? Not necessarily on this one, but just about the game in general. Any sort of closing thoughts on it?
Just closing thoughts, I suppose. I absolutely loved it. Great, just great, great pick. I can't believe I didn't play this first time round. It's bizarre. I don't know. Like I said back in probably the first episode, that I was so into the Switch at the time that I just didn't. Did just miss me by.
Yeah.
But I've clocked it at 42 hours. It said on the PlayStation. I can only assume that'll be like 40 hours of just. I've absolutely loved, and then two hours
in
muscle fine.
Yeah,
I think this is, I mean, I loved this game first time round. I've loved it even more this time. Look, having Nasser and to you guys about it, and yeah, hearing Mads' kind of counterpoint on it has actually just, you know, elevated the game even more in my mind. This, it's easy to get really cynical at the moment, like with everything going on and all of the press around Sony and Microsoft, and it's easy just to, I don't know, start to fall out of love with it a little bit. But I think, like, when you play games like this and you like, as Jim just said, so much love and has gone into every aspect of this game. Yeah, there's missteps. You know, we've picked up on missteps and not everyone loves it, and that's absolutely fine. Mm. But, like, I'd really recommend people watch that. There was a YouTube documentary about the making of this game that released in about 2019. It's well worth your time to watch. It's like a kind of, you know, one of those in the studios.
Yeah.
You know, how much they poured into it. Like, it's for me, it's like AAA gaming at its absolute best. You know, these experiences that you can't have in any other medium other than gaming. And it's like, it's kind of just why we do it, to have these, everything, the music, the visuals, the gameplay. You know, it's, for me, like, it's one of my favorite games, and it's probably, along with The Last of Us 2, my favorite PS4 game. I think it's just a masterpiece in my mind. You know, it just speaks to me, like the pacing, the combat, you know, everything about it. It just is just right up my street, and I've absolutely loved it.
Yep.
Yeah. It made me think, actually, when you said that on the Discord about you being your favourite PlayStation 4 game. And I was just thinking the games that, because I didn't play The Last of Us on the PS3, I played the PS4 version. And just thinking.
Game, yeah, but cool.
Just think.
Yeah. I was
just
about
thinking how many. Just how many games have made me feel like that from the PS4 games. Just an amazing, amazing console.
And a great library as well.
Yeah. And you don't need to play the PS4 now because you can play them all on the PS5.
Well, this is that. Even if we're not going to see as many of games of this nature for the foreseeable, No, maybe ever. It doesn't matter. We've got such a great back catalogue of them to be playing anyway.
We don't need new games.
You know, there's a lot of chat about the console cycles being longer, maybe not seeing a PS6 until 28, 29. Great. I'm all for it. I'm this generation still feels incredibly fresh to me. I'm not at this point in my kind of gaming career. I'm not looking for cutting edge improvement, or I'm not looking for generational leaps anymore. I just want more stuff like this. And
I want comfy slippers.
Yeah.
I want shiny new shoes.
Which is what all of these are. And
don't get me wrong, I love the shiny new shoes as well. But I'm happy with this game is 8 years old. Can you believe it?
It's incredible. It feels so fresh. The PS5 still feels so fresh, and just the fact that, like you were saying, on this one console, I've played The Last of Us series, I've played the Horizon series, I've played God of War,
You got your money's worth.
We may well be playing Ragnarok at some point, you know. Mm. When you think about
Spider-Man, I played Spider-Man, Uncharted.
And there are so many of these franchises that we haven't even...
And all the games that we've not played.
...touched on this podcast. Yeah. And there's no two ways about it. I played this game back on release, as you well know, and thought it was a really good game, which is ultimately why I picked it based on that, but... It's a considerably better game, and I've enjoyed it considerably more this time around as a consequence of how we've played it, discussing it a wee bit more, and just taking my time a bit more with it as well, I think. I've just been grateful for it, I think, whereas previously I bought it on a whim, played it, I thought, yeah, great, it's another good game. But I think these days, because of how we maybe analyze them a bit more, and the time's a bit more or a lot more precious now, and I had to be a lot more selective with my games, is that, you know, when you find one that you enjoy, then I just appreciate good games, or games that speak to me so much these days, and this has very much been one of those. But I've absolutely loved it. But if I can, I was wanting to leave the final word to you, because I just wanted to say, first and foremost, obviously a massive thanks. You've brought so much extra to the game in general, to our recordings, the podcast, to the Discord chat, with all of your, it really kind of comes across how much these stories mean to you, and also how much of an additional insight you've given us into it all. So thank you for all that.
Yeah, no worries. My pleasure. So I've just checked the Steam. I've put 42 hours in as well, Jim. Just the same shoot.
There we are.
Yeah. So I played it on PC, of course, but 42 hours, and I would say the same as you, Jim. I really enjoyed the 40 of them. I mean, this was a beauty of a game. It was good fun. The combat is, for me, not as good as in Dark Souls, but it's still really, really good. It's popcorn gaming for me, this. The narrative is also popcorn gaming, the battle system, and it's a beauty, and it sounds good, and the voice acting is really high quality. So it's like playing a movie, and a good one at that. And it was good fun. Great pick.
Good. Well, I'm glad that to some degree everybody's enjoyed it, and hopefully everybody's got something out of it as well. And obviously, as always, thank you very much for engaging with it as much as you have done. And again, just another massive thanks to you, Mads, for giving us all this stuff. The additional side content, but the bonus content. Yeah, for
it was great. It was no goblins, but it was great.
Is anything though?
It's no Rick Dangerous, is it?
No, exactly.
But, I guess that kind of brings my time at the helm to an end. So with that in mind, Chris, which before we say our goodbyes, what is coming up next?
Waffles.
What is the plan?
This is the end
of another great season of playthrough. So probably a nice big warm thank you to everyone who helps us in this little endeavor we have here. Big thanks to Dean Swain for tirelessly producing our covers and telling me who I need to thank when we publish them. I always like that. Steve Erickson for our intro and outro music that even now Andy uses.
Who knew? I hope you all stuck around long enough to listen to it. To be a lot.
We have outro music.
In.
Okay.
To avoid those
beats to his own drum, didn't he, Andy? That's what he wants.
Yeah.
He sands to his own bass. So we avoid those copyright strikes. Thanks to Steve. And obviously the Discord crew, amazing.
Yeah.
We're going to see many of them at the weekend at Arcade Club. It's always such a laugh to do these things, you know, with good intelligent, occasional chat, but mainly just keeping it real with each other and having a blast.
Which episode was that?
I'm sure there was Disco Elysium, maybe.
Yeah, I wasn't on that one.
That was over my head.
Halo.
No, it's been really good. It's been another great season. We'll look back and reflect on this season and obviously nominate our next games when we come back with the next dose of hot, salty, buttery waffles. And that's what's coming up next. I don't think we should take too long because I think we're probably all itching to.
We'll just be recording drunken waffles at the Saturday night. So.
We could
do drunken cast.
Yeah. Yeah, we could do a live. We could do waffles live and
waffles
premiere in
waffles
bar.
Live.
Yeah. What could possibly go wrong?
Yes. Maybe an opportunity will present. But yeah, no, thanks to everyone. We'll obviously have a good look back at this season, but you know, we'll kind of probably pick our highlights during the waffle episode. So unless there's anything else for you guys to add.
No, just before I go, I just want to say a final shout out to Team Chiseldoor.
Nice.
Mike was in on Team Chiseldoor.
Listen, there are plenty, okay? There are plenty. I think, like,
I wouldn't say that.
we're reasonable people, and I think we're very happy to stand back and we'll hold our peace until we feel there's been a real injustice that's been done, which was the general reception to my announcement about how people view the Chiseling. And I particularly liked when he said that he'll deliberately fail them so he gets a chance to do it all over again. That's inspired. I was kicking myself afterwards. I said, why didn't I think of that? I would genuinely go back in. I would start New Game Plus just to get that all over again. So to
folks,
those of you...
you ever seen Old School? Can you imagine
me
that? You're my boy, Blue.
You're my boy. Yeah.
There will be no Chiseling Doors next season, we hope.
No.
We'll see you all on the flip side.
Indeed.
Goodbye for now.
Bye for now.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.